Recorded live at the wonderful Big Sushi Studio, it's my pleasure to introduce you to Slaughter Film.
Hello, you filthy animals. I am Corey, Rock Lobster Carr, and I'm accompanied, as always, by Forrest, the man in the box, Taylor, and this is Slaughter Film, the weekly podcast devoted to reviewing the films that are legendary, even in hell. Now, with 50% less rape.
That's right. No, absolutely no talk about rape in this one. Yeah. This time we're going to be reviewing Quentin Tarantino's newest opus, Django Unchained.
Yay!
And I will be doing a little like mini review because I want to talk about Django mostly. But I also want to talk about, since we're now in the year 2013, I felt to talk about the most obsolete movie of all time, Roland Emmerich's 2012. A movie that is so bad, we should not think about it ever, ever again.
But, but you're making us.
Oh, yeah. I'm an asshole like that. what'd you do besides hang out at a rockin' New Year's Eve party?
I hung out at a rockin' New Year's Eve party.
Yes.
There was rock band and beers, yes, and girls kissing each other.
Best kind of party. I haven't played rock band in forever.
And, yeah, same here.
And we totally rocked Alice in Chains.
Yes,
so.
We pwned it. It's like one of the few songs I can sing good. Or at least I give the impression that it sounded good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Anything else? Because, yeah, I did nothing else besides that.
No, I kind of just like hung out at home. I edited our new episode.
Oh, yes.
For those of you who like that sort of thing, we haven't made one in a while, but yeah, we finally got together around Christmas time to film one, and we review Gremlins. So by the time these words reach your cerebellum, it should also be on our website, so make sure to check that out.
Oh, yeah. So yes, as you all know, there was supposed to be some kind of an apocalypse that...
The Rapture?
Well, no, that's later. This is a different kind of apocalypse. That
Y2K?
No. But you're close. This was some sort of calendar that was started by an indigenous people in Central America. I don't know. Apparently, when calendars end, the world ends, because that's how calendars work. Anyway, suffice to say, it was a complete piece of bullshit. And now I get to be super smart to all the people that believe in that, because it's dumb. I know nobody here. I know nobody here believes in that shit. But I couldn't believe how many people were actually like filling out their bomb shelters and like what some people like, you know, took trips to Central America to like be at the Mayan pyramid or whatever like that. It's like, yeah, what the fuck? And people actually flooded NASA's website with emails asking about, is the world going to end? And they had to get an actual expert to talk to them. I was like, those poor, poor experts. Here they are doing groundbreaking science, and now they have to talk about this Mickey Mouse shit. So,
one thing I do find like humorous about it is it keeps getting referred to as like the Mayan prophecy and shit. I'm pretty sure they wrote some shit down, and then we saw it and we're like, oh my god, like we made all that,
yeah,
up. Like,
what I hate about the prophecy, it isn't even a prophecy. It was just a calendar.
Exactly.
Like, when
we're
the calendar
like, oh,
ended,
this can't be good.
Yeah, when the calendar ended, the Mayans would just throw a big party and then started a new calendar.
Like we do.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why like I can't imagine a few thousand years from now when we're all extinct, if like aliens come to our planet and they're like, oh my god, they like kept records of their days and months and it ends. Oh, maybe that's how they all died. No, we all drank too much and then, you know, the ozone layer or honey boo boo and our brains turned inside. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Well, we'll think of something. I can't wait for the next apocalypse scare. I don't know what it's going to be now, but I'm sure there's already something brewing.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, in our lifetime, we've already seen, like, a handful of different ones.
There's, like, I saw once a list of how many times people have prophesied that the world's going to end, and there's, like, hundreds of them.
Yeah.
But here we are. But anyway, this 2012 thing, like, captured the attention of the world for years and years, and a bunch of movies were made about it. Most of it on from the venerable Asylum Film Company. There was, wasn't it called Doomsday Prophecy?
There were a bunch of them.
I can't even remember
either
what their names were.
2012 was at the beginning of the title or at the end,
yeah.
But they were like, ones where comets hit Earth, mm-hmm. and ones were like robots attacked, and yeah. ones were earthquakes.
That's the worst thing about that prophecy, by the way, is that they didn't even specify what it was going to be.
Right.
At least Y2K, you know, the computers are going to go haywire and start launching nuclear weapons. That's something. This
right.
is, oh, it might be an asteroid, or it might be the poles shifting, or it might
yeah.
be crashing into a black hole. Well, those are all completely different things. Like,
and
give
us
something.
And how do you prepare for shit like
yeah.
that? Like, one in particular, like, oh, it's an earthquake. Or, you know, whatever.
Okay.
So I guess I shouldn't be... I'll stand in the doorway or something. You know what I mean? But like, the black hole thing or comets. Like, what the fuck are you going to do? They, you know,
you're
comets
gonna die.
Extinct,
that's...
You know, yeah, they killed off the dinosaurs. But you, because you're smart, you're going to, like, bury a school bus in your backyard and live in it. And somehow you're going to be okay. Just got to let it go, man.
On top of all these movies and... hundreds of hours of History Channel documentaries, quote-unquote, about it. Filmmaker Roland Emmerich of Independence Day fame decided to up the ante and make 2012.
It's not just California. It's the whole world. The government is building these ships.
If we can get there,
we can be safe.
We have to move now!
Look at me. Do I look scared? Hang on!
Nothing gives Roland Emmerich a boner faster than destroying famous monuments. And
yeah.
this movie, you can just destroy every famous monument. I'm not going to get into the plot too much, because if you've seen one Roland Emmerich movie, you've seen them all. There's a guy in this one, played by John Cusack, who is estranged from his family, and then he discovers that something horrible is going to happen, and then he runs and saves his family, and then throughout all the destruction, it gets him closer with his family, and then he's better, even though, like, millions of people have died. But it's okay, because he's back with his family. Yeah, there's the plot. This movie's awful, and nobody else seems to see it. When it first came out, I wanted to, like, I looked at all my, like, favorite reviewers, and I just wanted to hear them tear this movie down, and they were all like, eh, you know, it was bad, but I liked it on a goofy, ironic level. And I was like, no, it's it's beyond ironic bad. It's just bad. I hate it. And nobody else seemed to share my views on it. So let me just briefly discuss all the things that are terrible about it. One, Woody Harrelson's character is awful. He plays a conspiracy theorist guy who is, like, narrating the end of the world when the super volcano underneath Yellowstone erupts. First of all, if the super volcano under Yellowstone erupted, there wouldn't be a United States anymore. Like, this whole, like, area would just be a giant black cloud. But no, the family escapes, and their plane can only apparently fly, like, 10 feet above the ground. Like, there's so many shots of, like, them just taking off as everything's crumbling around them.
Yes. Fuck, like, they're the wheels of the plane lift off the ground as it, like, crumbles into the magma
yeah.
beneath the earth.
That's another thing, too. Like, these movies are spectacles, and I know I shouldn't, like, think about it too much, but I always do. It's like, how can I enjoy, like, a roller coaster ride when all around them, like, thousands upon thousands of people are getting killed as the city's, like, crumbling below the earth, you know? And I don't know if I'm supposed to think about that, but I do. Like, I can't be like, yeah, that's awesome! You know, all these people are being crushed to death! Yeah! And I don't know why, but it's only Roland Emmerich movies that make me feel that way. Like, I can enjoy, like, death and destruction, but... I don't know. I don't know what it is about his movies, but I've just never liked them. Not even Independence Day. Like, I thought Independence Day was the shit when I was 14, but now I look back, it's really bad. Ironically, the only one that I like on a goofy, ironic level, and people are going to hate me for saying this, but the remake of Godzilla. I thought that movie was goofy, dumb, funny. Like, it wasn't a Godzilla movie. I thought it was more of a remake of The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms.
Yeah,
but
it might as well have been.
At least that one, it wasn't taking itself seriously at all. Like, all of the other movies, maybe that's the problem. Like, on one hand, it's this, like, goofy spectacle. On the other hand, there's, like, a serious message in there. Like, you know, the most obvious one is the whole, like, save the planet from Day After Tomorrow. That was just terrible. But I guess that brings me to another thing I hate about this movie, and this is the thing I'm going to talk about the most. The bad guy, Oliver Platt's character, is not really all that bad. Because the whole thing is, like, you know, all these rich guys have built these ships, and they're going to escape on these. I thought they were spaceships, like, but they were just, like, regular ships.
Well, they should have been if they were smart.
Yeah, but, you know, all these rich people have paid to fund it, so of course they all get to get on, and nobody else. And this one guy's like, we gotta let more people on, And he's like, well, these people paid. And he's like, you mean they paid for it to get on here? And Oliver Platt's basically just like, oh, you mean life's not fair? And it's like, well, he's kind of got a point, you know? I mean, like, you can't let the entire world on these ships, so there you go, you know? Yeah. And then, like, there's a scene, I can't remember the guy's name, but, like, the other hero in the movie, he comes onto his, like, stateroom, and he's like, you could fit 50 people in this room alone. And I'm like, you're an idiot. If you put that many people on, you don't have all the supplies for them. I mean, you can only save so many people. And, like, Oliver Platt's character is the only one who's, like, telling us these logical truths, and he's the bad guy. And I'm like, why? I mean, it sucks. Yeah, it's callous, but this is how you survive.
Well,
you know?
I think by saying that they could fit 50 more people in, what he really means is they can fit 25 more people on and another 25 that are going to be their food.
Ah, I see.
That was, like, the whole idea that they had these Noah's Ark-type ships built or being built.
It was lame.
Well, you have John Cusack and his dumb family, and it's like, they're trying to outrun this global event. I'm like, where the fuck are you gonna go? The globe is fucked.
Well, the answer is Africa, because apparently in the end everything has shifted and the sea level has risen, and apparently Africa has, like, risen above it all, because there's this end scene where you see the ships, you know, sailing away, and it pans up to the earth, and the whole earth is water except for Africa, and it's like, it's perfectly, you know, the shape of the continent. I was like, what? So there was, like, an Africa-shaped fault line that just lifted Africa above Mount Everest?
Because, well, yeah.
This movie is beyond awful. And I also hate all the family crap. You know, the whole point is that John Cusack gets back with his family. But, uh-oh, she's married to this other, like, dorky guy, who, by the way, is the real hero of the movie, because he's the guy who knows how to fly the plane. He spends the whole movie flying them out of danger. I thought he was going to die in the initial, like, attack. Like, I thought, like, the first earthquake, he was going to get crushed by, like, a building or whatever, and then that would be that, and now John Cusack comes. But no, he sticks around till almost the end. And I was really rooting for him. I was like, oh, maybe this is going to be better. Maybe, you know, even though John Cusack's the hero for whatever reason, he is not going to get back with his family, and this guy is still, and, you know, it's still going to be, like, the apocalypse didn't solve their marital problems, you know, and this guy's still going to be the new husband or whatever. But, oops, I'm an idiot for thinking that, because at the very end, as they're trying to climb into the ship, they're, like, inside the machinery, and then the door starts closing, and the gears are moving and everything, and then the new husband gets ground up in gears. And then it's okay, because now John Q's got his family back. I think that's another thing I hate about these movies, is that the hero never loses anything, and in fact, he gained his family back. So for him, the apocalypse was awesome. For the other poor guy, he got ground up in gears.
Right. He was the one that got his John Cusack's kids, like, braces. Yeah. You know, he's the one, like, making sure to send Christmas cards from, like, you know, I don't know. Right, dress like Santa, rather. That's a better one. Yeah, right. You know, he's doing all the hard work.
Well, I hope he likes up heavy machinery, because that's his reward. So, in conclusion, fuck this movie. But the real reason I want to talk about it is because of this whole fascination with the apocalypse. You know, I said before that, you know, there's been hundreds of times people have predicted the end of the world. And the end of the world would be a really, really terrible thing, obviously. But people want it. Like, these people that always talk about the Mayan apocalypse or Y2K or the rapture or whatever it is, they are, like, really, really into it. Why is that? Why does the death of the entire world make people, like, get a boner?
May I field that question?
You may.
At least when it comes to a biblical standpoint.
Well,
it proves them right.
Yeah.
And then they get to go to heaven. And everyone else gets to go to hell. And it makes them proud. And that should also send them to hell, because that's one of the seven deadly sins.
So I understand that at the very least. But, you know, the whole nuclear war and all that stuff, I don't get it. And there actually is a psychology behind it, is that people are narcissistic. And people don't want to think that the world goes on without them. Because, you know, you die and it sucks for you because you're dead, but the rest of the world just moves on like you were never there. And you miss, and then you miss whatever history comes after you. So if the world ends before you die, you don't miss anything, you know? And it automatically makes your generation the most important generation because you're the one who experiences the apocalypse. And then, like, you take in other things like, I mean, the zombie apocalypse is a big one now, obviously. Everyone's talking about zombies. And that takes in another factor is that there's no longer any morality behind, like, killing or whatever, you know, because you don't have to feel bad about blowing zombies away because it's not really people.
Right.
So I find that funny that, like, even the most horrible tragedy in the entire Earth is just fuel for our narcissism. And that's why these movies will never stop coming out. And that's why I'm sure, like, right around the corner, we're going to find a new apocalypse that everyone's going to make shitty movies about and the History Channel won't shut the fuck up about. But for right now, let us lament the death of 2012. Oh, did I say lament? I meant celebrate. Also, it took place in the summer, and I was like, wait a second, it's supposed to be December 21st. Then I found out I was wrong, because I guess there were, like, 2012 experts or whatever who said, you know, the Mayans didn't account for leap year.
Yeah,
so in actuality, the 2012 apocalypse happened in July.
Yeah.
So, I was wrong. You
well,
know,
but still, for everyone who is, like, waiting on December, like, you're all wrong. That shit happened forever ago. Who cares?
Right, right.
If you're not dead already, then you're not going to die because of the Mayans.
Well, that's all I really want to talk about this. I just wanted to, again, point and laugh at all the people who believed in this shit, but also say, you know, we're all susceptible because we all, you know, are afraid of our own mortality and also afraid of the world going on without us, and that's what fuels this apocalypse mania or whatever. But that doesn't excuse Roland Emmerich for making shitty movies. This movie, I honestly thought it was a parody when I first saw the trailer.
Really?
Just because, like, well, you know, we're so used to Roland Emmerich destroying stuff in this movie. This movie's like, well, now watch as Los Angeles gets destroyed in an earthquake, and then there's tornadoes, and there's all this. I was like, this looks like, remember the Kentucky Fried Movie? There's a parody movie called the Kentucky Fried Movie that came out in the 70s, but they had their own, like, fake trailer called That's Armageddon, and it was just, like, imagine every, like, horrible natural disaster just happening at the same time. 2012 looked like a big-budget version of That's Armageddon. So I was sitting there like, this has got to be a fucking joke. This has got to be, like, a parody movie, but then it says a Roland Emmerich film. I was like, oh, no, it's serious business. This movie looks awful.
I think I just while you were talking, I figured out why people want the Armageddon to happen on their shift.
Why?
So that when they die and go to some afterlife, they can be the guy that tells the story that they died in the Armageddon. You know what I mean? Like,
it automatically makes you king shit in the
right,
afterlife.
Yeah, how'd you die? Armageddon. Wow, really? What was it like? Nukes, you know, comets, the world opened up and it was crazy. How about you? Oh, I pushed too hard in the toilet.
That's good. So
we all can't be winners.
Yep. Some of us die pushing too hard in the toilet, and that's 2012. So enough of that shit. I just wanted to get the whole, like, apocalypse shit out of the way. The real star this time is Django, and I'm gonna let you field most of it, but I'm gonna chime in a lot because I saw this movie too, and I've got a lot to say about it. But
okay,
I hand it over to you, sir.
All right, yes, from this year, Django Unchained, written and directed by Quentin Tarantino.
Good cold evening, gentlemen. Amongst your inventory, I've been led to believe is a specimen I'm keen to acquire.
When I hear the trumpet sound...
What's your name?
I'm on a rise right out of the ground.
Django. Then you're exactly the one I'm looking for.
Hey, stop talking to him.
Calm down. I'm simply a customer trying to conduct a transaction.
Last chance, fancy pants.
Oh, very well.
You know what a bounty hunter is?
You kill people, and they give you a reward.
Better they are, bigger the reward.
I need your help. I'm looking for the Brittle Brothers. However, I don't know what they look like, but you do. Don't you?
And I do have to say, before I even talk about this movie, that I'm glad, because it seemed like for a while there he wasn't making movies, or he was, like, producing or doing something.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad to see that he's come back in full force with totally. I think Grindhouse maybe got the gears going. Yeah. Because,
well, Kill Bill also, like the Kill Bill between Jackie Brown and Kill Bill, that was his biggest lull. Like that was a seven year difference between those two movies. You know, see, I was like, wow, is Tarantino gonna do anything else, or is he like retired or whatever? And then Kill Bill came out, and now he's been like steadily making movies. You
yeah, because since Inglourious Bastards, like I went and saw that in the theater, and that gave me a boner. And then like, I heard this was coming out, and I'm like, cool, it's like a throwback to those other Django spaghetti westerns, mm-hmm. and boner. So but yeah, like he does this thing where he takes like these old drive-in type movies or like those genre picture themes, mm-hmm. and he throws a good script with a budget, but then he still incorporates all those things that made him drive-in,
yeah.
you know what I mean?
Yep.
And that's what makes him work so well.
Right.
But I guess I should just talk about the movie.
Yes.
We begin our tale on a moonlight trail, mm-hmm. Where we see Dr. King Schultz run into a couple of slave traders, and he kind of sought them out specifically. He's trying to find a very particular slave. You see, Dr. King Schultz, he's a dentist, but only on TV. He's actually a bounty hunter, and he's looking for this particular slave, Django. The D is silent, by the way. so that he can gain his friendship and hopefully help him identify these three brothers that worked on a plantation that Django was from. Because apparently they had a run-in with the law, and now Schultz wants to get compensated for bringing these men in, but he doesn't know what they look like. So he's going to hopefully purchase Django so that they can work together, identify the three brothers, kill them, and get the bounty. right away, like this is the first scene of the movie, and the two slave traders are being dicks, and they don't want to sell them. And so, well, Schultz, he's got to do what he's got to do. So he just pulls out his gun and, like, shoots him. And, like, there's this scene right then where he's got a shotgun, and he shoots one of the men. And it looks like someone put a hand grenade in a jelly jar. And I'm just like, oh, this is going to be one of those movies. Awesome.
Yeah.
But the weird thing was I'm sitting in the theater next to a family. And, like, I'm accustomed to seeing blood squirt and whatever. And I'm thinking, fuck. I don't know what movie they came to see, but they're probably, like, warped and twisted now forever.
What family? Like, was it little kids and stuff?
No, but you could tell it was, like, a couple generations sitting together.
Okay. Because I hate when people bring their kids to movies that aren't for kids at all.
They shouldn't be, no.
I fucking hate kids, and I don't want to see them in my movies.
Then they cry.
Yeah.
So, the slave traders are dead. Schultz unchains Django.
Ooh, that's the title of the movie.
Yeah. Clever. But he explains, you know, why he's looking for him specifically, and they agree to work together. He says, look, Django, you know, we find these men and we kill them, you know, bring them to justice with a bullet. And then, you know, you can have your freedom, no big deal. You help me, I help you, sort of a thing. And actually, it doesn't take long for them to find these three brothers. They start going from plantation to plantation. They find them. They kill them. That's like the first half an hour of this movie, mm-hmm. or less maybe, and out of a like 2.5 hour long movie.
Yeah.
So you'd think that's more important, but it kind of isn't. Because now once they kill these men, Schultz talks to Django, and he's like, look, okay, now you're free. What are you going to do? And he explains that, you know, his wife is also a slave and he wants to find her. And Schultz just says, well, look, I can't, you know, you're a free man now, but I somehow feel responsible for helping you find your wife. And so the two of them agreed to work together to apprehend other fugitives through the winter. And in spring, they're going to go research who may have purchased his wife. And then, of course, you know, help Django get him.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, like, this movie goes, I find, like, it's 2.5 hours long, but the story is pretty simple.
It's actually longer than that. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Yeah. it's like, I don't know, they do this, and then they do that, and then, it's somehow an extremely
simplistic story, yeah, but there's a lot more going on to it than just the story, you know?
Right. So through the winter, they, you know, apprehend other fugitives. Along the way, Dr. Schultz teaches Django how to read and how to better shoot, even though he seems to be pretty much a natural.
Yeah.
So they've made a little bit of money. The time comes. It's spring. They start checking different, like, registries, because when, you know, it's slaves are like property. Mm-hmm. There are records of sales and things. So they find out that his wife has been purchased by Leonardo DiCaprio's character, Calvin Candy.
Yep.
And he apparently in this I forget what state it was in.
Mississippi.
Mississippi.
Yep.
Apparently in Mississippi he has like the biggest plantation. And it's not just like a plantation too. He has like female slaves for like a sex trade, and then he also dabbles in Mandingo fights.
Oh man.
I know. Well, that's like seeing that in the movie or even having it mentioned, it's sort of something that, I don't know, growing up in high school when you learn about civil rights and like mm-hmm. slavery, that's something that isn't mentioned.
No, it's horrifying. Like I said to my brother after we watched this, it's like, I really hope that Mandingo fighting doesn't exist in real life. I hope it's just like something that was Tarantino's idea or like from some movie that he liked.
Yeah.
There actually is a movie called Mandingo, so that's where he got that from.
Yeah.
But in doing research, I found out that it kind of was a thing.
It
was rare because, you know, slaves are expensive and people didn't want them hurting each other or whatever.
Yeah.
But it was like something for the sickest of the sick. But just the fact that it did exist makes me want to kill myself because that is horrifying to think of.
So in a nutshell, for those of you wondering, what the fuck's a Mandingo? you take a big angry black man who's a slave and then you pit him against another big angry black man and you hope that your big angry black man wins.
Yeah, you just have them fight gladiator style, and then people bet on them and shit like that. It's horrific, but
right. So Dr. Schultz and Django, they travel to the Candy Ranch.
Called Candyland.
Candyland,
I like that.
Yeah, that's what it was. And they start to devise this plan about how, well, first they have to like make sure his wife is there, which she is, mm-hmm. and then how are they going to get this guy's attention? Because if a guy walks up and says, oh, I want to buy one of your slave women, and I mean, Mr. Candy is like a big time operator. He's not going to pay any attention to one guy who wants to buy one slave just because, you know what I mean? So they build this story around that Dr. Schultz is interested in getting into the Mandingo fighting business, and Django is his like associate. He's a free slave who's there to help guide him through the ins and outs of Mandingo fighting so that he can get like the most for his money. And the idea also is that he's going to overpay because he's just getting into it. He wants, I don't know, he wants to start off on the right foot, I guess.
He wants the best of the best.
Right.
You know? Like,
he just doesn't want some guy. He's going to, you know, want to, he's willing to
overpay.
He doesn't
want Candy bringing out the B team, you know?
Right, right. And that's the whole thing. That's what gets Calvin's attention, how much they're willing to spend on a guy. So after a few days of like whining and dining, because, you know, it's a big business deal, you know, you gotta take the guy you're meeting to the titty bar and out to a steak dinner, and you know, that's essentially what that is. So they talk a little bit about you know, which guy, because he's, you know, Calvin, he's got a whole bunch of these Mandingo fighters. So they find one that they, you know, say that they like, and they're, you know, hammering out a deal and what they're going to pay and all this. And, oh, by the way, can you throw in that one slave girl? Because she's kind of neat and I like her.
Yep.
Oh, well, sure, you know, whatever.
Should probably mention that her name is Broomhilda because her first owners were German, and the wife of the German family taught her German too because she wanted to have someone to talk to.
Right,
and that's why in their story, that's why Dr. Schultz has an interest in her because he speaks German and she speaks German. You know,
yeah. So it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
but things go awry when when. Samuel L. Jackson's character, Steven, he's like the Uncle Tom character.
He very works, much so.
He works for Calvin Candy, and he's like a hand at one of his mansions, I guess it is.
He's like his head house servant, you know.
Like, right. But he's quick to throw Django and Mr. Schultz and Broomhilda under the tires.
Oh, yeah.
Once he realizes that they really aren't interested in a Mandingo, but they're there for the slave girl.
Specifically, yep.
Yeah, so he tips off Calvin, and he's pissed because it's been days. They've been like, you know...
Yeah, basically been wasting his time.
Yeah. And, yeah, they're just going to, like, pay for the girl. And I'm like, oh, we'll come back and buy the Mandingo. And obviously the plan was just to never come back.
Yeah.
So, well, that's where the shooting starts, I should say. Looking back, I think, like, I don't want to give away the very ending.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess that's safe to say. I said the shooting starts. I don't want to just imply that, like... You know, the hero,
right.
Django, just shoots everybody. It's a little more
it's
complicated
a Tarantino
than
movie,
that.
So there's always a little more ins and outs than that. But
right.
That's pretty much the plot. And like you said, it's so easy to explain. Like it's such a simple, like, basic plot. But then again, there's so much more going on
right.
in between it and everything.
Yeah,
you know?
He gets Django.
Yep.
They become buddies. They go to get his wife, and that's like
that's
the movie.
That. Yep. But yeah, this movie was freaking awesome. It wasn't as good as Inglourious Basterds, which I think is like a modern masterpiece. I really, really like that movie, but it's still really good. My only complaint, and this is kind of a big complaint, but it's my only one, but it's way too long. We mentioned
that
it's 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And again, without giving too much away, I do want to say there's a part in the movie where it could have ended perfectly. And then it goes on for like 20 more minutes.
Yeah.
And then after that 20 minutes, they're basically back where they were 20 minutes ago. So I'm like, why didn't they just end it there?
Like, yeah. They could have cut out like a section
yeah,
and just saved
and
some
it
time.
It wouldn't have made any kind of a difference. But other than that, yeah, good stuff. Very good stuff.
One of the reasons I like this, well, it's an entertaining movie to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's from beginning to end, the action is good. There are some funny moments. You know, it's well acted, well written.
Oh,
the dialogue's
yep.
good. But it also takes time out of the story to get very real when it comes
yeah.
to the slaves and how they're treated.
It does, yeah.
There's one scene in particular when one of the Mandingo guys tried to escape
mm-hmm.
because he just doesn't want to fight anymore.
Yeah.
He doesn't have it in him, and he doesn't want to get hit. And you
yeah,
know,
I don't blame the poor guy.
I mean, really, like every other day for a guy like this, it's life or death.
Yeah.
It's not even like he's going to get shot or something. He's going to
get
beat to death.
Get his eyes gouged out and beaten with a
right.
hammer or whatever the fuck
yeah.
he's going to do. Yeah.
And so you watch how terrified this man is, mm-hmm. and then... You know, Calvin just figures, screw it. I can do with him what I want because I own him. And he
yeah.
just lets dogs loose.
Ugh,
it's
yep.
fucked.
It's very fucked.
There are a couple moments like that in this movie. That one's probably the most, I don't know, troublesome mm-hmm. to watch, I guess.
The thing that disturbed me even more was the hot box. One of the characters, I won't say who exactly, is thrown in just like a metal box in the ground for trying to escape. And imagine that, just being in a metal box in Mississippi in the middle of the
yeah,
summer.
For days.
Yeah, and then, you know, they open it up and they throw a bucket of cold water on this person. I was like, oh my God, that would be so awful, you know? Like, that scene, even though it wasn't as visceral as the dog scene, that's
yeah.
the one that got me. I was like, shit. And that's what's so good about this movie, because, like, most movies, even ones that, like, are about slavery or, like, set in that time,
right.
they kind of gloss it over.
Yeah,
but
they're sort of, like, predictable and,
yeah.
I don't know, like, even, what is it, The Color Purple?
Yeah.
Like that, you see, it's harsh, but mm-hmm. at the same time, it's not right there with the slaves
yeah.
like this movie is.
Like, it would just be so psychologically... freaky, because like these people, they own you, they could do whatever they want. If they decided to, they could just kill you right then and there, and like that would just terrify you constantly, you know. So this movie, it's visceral, but it's also kind of psychological, just like they have just the implications of that, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's the ultimate exploitation, because, you know, what's the point of an exploitation movie? To exploit some like feelings in the audience or something that they want to see. So the whole time you see all these atrocities, I'm just like, blow these fuckers away.
Yeah, exactly.
And they
build
do,
up to the
and it's so satisfying to see like so many people. I won't you know mention too much about the shooting, but suffice to say, there are a lot of slave owners get their comeuppance throughout.
Yeah, I think like right now, a lot of critics, us included, are saying
mm-hmm.
how like this is a great movie and people should go see it.
Mm-hmm.
I do expect a handful of people to complain that it's racist.
It's because of like opposite
yeah,
of racist.
But I think a lot of people won't get it.
Oh no,
that's the
they
thing.
Use the N-word a few times.
Well,
racism.
You know, Tarantino's white and he wrote it. How would a race dumb shit like that always yeah. happens? But I think like looking further down the road, I think even though it is like an action exploitation type movie, mm-hmm. it will be held in fairly high regard.
I think so.
Because this movie has brutally honest truth nestled in a crazy fucking yeah, spaghetti western action movie. Yep. That was one thing, too, I wanted to mention. I'm glad I just thought of it. It's like Django was a series of spaghetti westerns. Mm-hmm. And so when Tarantino made this, he made it uniquely American by having the slave be a main character rather than just a guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just... It makes it a little more unique, I think, in a way. I just like that he bothered to do that. You know, if he was going to change anything, that's kind of smart,
right.
I guess.
By the way, did you find out who that one Italian guy is? You know, it's the class scene where he asks, what's your name? And he says, Django, the D, silent, you know. And then I know, and then walks off. I was like, that's got to be somebody.
It could
have
been.
He's probably some, like, Italian exploitation director that Tarantino likes. I wonder if maybe he was the director of one of the original Django yeah. movies or something.
Or
you
Django.
Know? Yeah, right. But I didn't look it up, but if anybody knows, let me know. Because I know that had to be, like, a nod to somebody famous
yeah.
to Quentin Tarantino.
Because it was, like, a very brief scene, but it very easily could have just not happened. So
yeah.
it must have been there for a reason.
Yeah. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Like again, I don't want to get too much into it, but it wasn't as slyly subversive as Inglourious Basterds. Like I love the fact like seeing Inglourious Basterds in the theater, people were cheering when all the Nazis are getting gunned down in the theater, and I was like, but before the Nazis were cheering an American Nazi shooting Americans, so Tarantino has just turned us into the villains in his own movie. Oh, this is so awesome! You know, like there was nothing like that. There was no like aha moment,
no.
But still, like it's so satisfying, you know, seeing you know Django is kind of like this avenger for all the atrocities that are committed against people and everything, you know. So again, it's the ultimate exploitation film, you know? And to all the people crying racism, shut up, you. Because, like, again, it takes place in pre-Civil War times. This is the way people talk. This is the way people behave.
Right.
And it's not like Tarantino's condoning it. In fact, oh, that's right, he's doing the exact opposite. You know?
people aren't smart. But anyway.
Anything else to say about it?
No, I think that's everything.
Okay. Check it out. Definitely check it out. Yeah, that's all I got to say, too.
Okay.
Django, it was awesome. anything else?
Do you have anything in the works for the website? Written review
or
anything?
Oh, yeah. There was some review I was supposed to do, like, a year ago or whatever. Oh, yeah, that's right. Antichrist. I'm, like, halfway through that review, and I just hit a dead end just because, like, there's so much going on in that movie. I don't want to talk about, like, every individual, like, theme and everything, you know, but it's just taking forever. But I promise, very, very soon, there will be an Antichrist review on the website, so just hold out.
Yeah. Like I mentioned, we have a new episode
yeah.
where we reviewed Gremlins. And a little while ago, too, I was inspired by Forrest, Jason versus Michael, and I made, which is going to be like a short series called The Lost Tapes, where I show a short film that I made with friends in high school, and then I kind of like make fun of it. But that's already on the website. Check that out. And because McDonald's is selling the McRib very shortly, hopefully this weekend, something like that, I want to start a written review for Street Trash, another 80s gooey movie. Because I don't know what the fuck McRib is made of, but, I mean, it tastes good. But then I'm just, my butthole's destroyed. It's not natural, whatever it is. It's about as natural as the thing I just said.
Anyway. Well, on that note, always be sure to check out our website, slaughterfilm.com, for news and reviews.
Yes, and make sure to leave comments and questions somewhere, and we will address them in a later recording.
All right, we out.
This edition of Slaughter Film has been brought to you by our producer, John Lindvay, introduced by me, Ricky Morrow, and music by Xeno Genocide.